Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1892, with a release date of November 15th, 2013, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Ham radio responds as Typhoon Haiyan devastates the central Philippines. The ISS Expedition 37 crew brings Olympic torch home from space. A New Mexico resident fined $25,000 for interference to police communications. BBC Online News Magazine highlights ham radio and ABC's Last Man Standing now boasts 17 hams on its crew. Find out more on Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1892, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Jim Davis, W2JKD.
Upwards of 10,000 or more may have lost their lives when Monster Typhoon Haiyan, also known as Typhoon Yolanda, hit the central Philippines on Friday, November the 8th. Numerous others were injured, and at least 9 million people were affected in some way by the monster storm. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Meacham, ZL2BHF, is in Nelson, New Zealand, with a summary of what's known so far about ham radio's part in the post-typhoon relief.
For more than a week, the aftermath of Monster Typhoon Haiyan, rated at Category 5, has seen many lives lost, people injured, widespread damage, despair, and desperation. The death toll has been put at 2,000 or so officially, even though estimates have been much higher. A saving grace in the disaster is that the superstorm missed more populated areas like Manila, was fast-moving, and authorities were able to evacuate some low-lying areas. In its aftermath, priority is being given to the immediate essentials of power, communications, shelter, and food. This is followed by clean water, sanitation, and disease control. But it's in the area of communications where ham radio is doing its part. Raymond Anquillin, DU1UGZ of the Philippines Amateur Radio Association, or PARA, says that in preparation for the typhoon, that its ham emergency radio operator, or HERO network, was activated early. He reports that HERO stations using high frequency and VHF have been relaying vital messages, helping rescue and relief authorities and their communities. DU1UGZ says that in every major area hit by the typhoon and elsewhere in the archipelago, the HERO network was in action. Hams are providing communications at Tacloban, Eastern Samar, Cebu, Bohol, Sighihor, Palo, Bantayan, Tagbilaan, Dumaguete, Panay, Rojas, and many more places. This includes signals into the capital city of Manila. Primary typhoon emergency relief communications is taking place on the frequency of 7.095 MHz, and hams within radio range, but not involved in relief efforts, are being asked to stay clear of this frequency for the moment. Jim Linton, VK3PC, is the chairman of the International Amateur Radio Union Region 3 Disaster Communications Committee. He says that these individuals should be commended for their efforts. Quoting VK3PC, they have transceivers that are mostly basic and as yet don't seem to have the deserved recognition from the authorities and the non-government aid organizations who use them. This is not the first time HERO stations have been involved in providing emergency communications. Over the years, there's been many disasters in the Philippines, including earthquakes, floods, and mudslides, but none on the scale of the current Typhoon Haiyan. Philippines President Benigno Aquino visited Tacloban City, where almost all buildings were lost as tidal surges came through its streets. He pledged that local authorities are to house about 45,000 families and give them food. President Aquino said he was lost for words to adequately describe the enormity of the disaster affecting 36 provinces. He has declared the situation to be a national calamity. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meachins at L2BHF in Nelson, New Zealand.
An international relief effort is now underway, with rescue workers struggling to reach some remote areas. And once again, the frequency of 7.095 MHz is being used for post-typhoon emergency relief, and hams worldwide are being asked to keep that clear at this time. Also, Google has set up an online person finder page where you can request information about someone in the typhoon's area or leave information about a person that you might know about. It's on the web at google.org/personfinder/2013-Yolanda. How long this service will be available is not known. The Deccan Chronicle of India says that what's known as traditional fishermen want the right to use amateur radio with both free ham gear and GPS. This as a communications safety net when they venture out to sea. The newspaper says these fishermen have not found any truly affordable and reliable electronic method to send or receive communications while fishing in deep sea, especially when they face severe cyclonic storms. And as such, they're forced to rely on what they term as unreliable mobile phones with no guarantee of signals reaching destinations or backup power to keep them operating. A large number of these fishermen venture 200 miles or more from the shore for several days at a time. Their only way to communicate with their location or safety with their family are the unreliable mobile phones that they now have. And because of this, fishermen have been demanding the state government provide them with amateur radio gear and GPS equipment at a subsidy, as they cannot afford to purchase this equipment on their own. They say that if they're equipped with amateur radio, it will help to communicate the weather updates, find their location at sea, and receive directions as to which way they should proceed to avoid impending danger. Currently, some 70,000 fishermen from several villages along India's coast are awaiting the response from the government on their demand. The president of the District Fishermen's Welfare Association is quoted in the article as saying that when communications networks fail during a storm, fishermen find no source of information unless they're equipped with ham radio and GPS to help them reach the shore safely. The question of licensing was not touched on in the news article. You can read more at tinyurl.com/India-fishing-ham-radio. The International Space Station Expedition 37 crew has returned safely to Earth, bringing with it the Olympic torch that flew to the ISS with the Expedition 38 crew. Those returning with the torch were Russian Commander Fyodor Yurchichkin, RN-3FI, American astronaut Karen Nyberg, and European Space Agency astronaut Luca Parmitano, KF5-KDP. The torch will be used to light the Olympic flame with the Winter Olympics open in Sochi, Russia. Ironically, the three returning spacefarers made the trip back to Kazakhstan in the same spacecraft that ferried them to the ISS last May. In DX Upfront, while short notice, permission has just been granted by India's Ministry of Telecommunications for a 9-member team to activate the Leukadive Islands between November 20th and December the 10th. The group plans to operate from Agati Island with the call sign VU7AG with three high-power stations running CW, single sideband, and RIDI. Also, the call VU7KA has been issued for demonstration purposes for use on Kavarti Island. This call will be used only briefly when team members make presentations to the local administration to help to educate them about amateur radio. Now, given the short notice, the team is working hard to get things organized and is looking to be on the air for at least 14 days. More is on the web now at vu7ag.info. Bill Moore, NC1L, at the ARRL Awards Desk, reports that the K9W Wake Atoll Commemorative Expedition has been approved for DXCC credit. More information, including QSL card routing, can be found on the web at www.wake2013.org, and we will have further DX news later on in this week's report. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the K7CHN repeater serving Seattle, Washington. This note is for those of you who listen to these newscasts via podcast. According to Kevin Trotman, N5PRE, if you're having issues with iTunes not downloading the newest podcasts of Amateur Radio Newsline the last few weeks, it may be due to a glitch that was discovered by one of our listeners and confirmed at AR Newsline. Thanks to Ed Durant, VK2JI, we were made aware of this problem affecting some users. It seems that the newest version of iTunes released last week has fixed the issue. If you're having this problem, please update your iTunes installation and the problem will more than likely be resolved. Operating on a police department frequency without a license is going to cost a New Mexico resident $25,000. Amateur Radio Newsline's Norm Seeley has the details.
The FCC has affirmed a $25,000 forfeiture order issued to Estefan J. Gutierrez of Las Vegas, New Mexico. This for what the regulatory agency terms is willful and repeated violation of Sections 301 and 333 of the Communications Act by his operation on a frequency without authorization, and is willful and malicious interference with licensed operations by an emergency service. On September 1, 2011, the Enforcement Bureau's San Diego office issued a notice of apparent liability for forfeiture in the amount of $25,000 to Gutierrez for operation without FCC authorization on 159.150 megahertz. This is the frequency licensed to the Las Vegas, New Mexico Police Department. He was also accused of willful and malicious interference with the police department's operations on that frequency. In response to the NAL, Gutierrez did not deny the violations. He did, however, request cancellation or reduction of the forfeiture amount based on his inability to pay. But in its decision to affirm the full $25,000 amount, the FCC noted that Gutierrez produced no documentation to support his claim of an inability to pay. As such, he was given the customary 30 days from the November 7th release of the forfeiture order to pay the amount in full. For Amateur Radio Newsline, Norm Seeley, KI7UP in Scottsdale, Arizona.
If Gutierrez fails to comply with the allotted time, the case may be referred to the U.S. Department of Justice for further enforcement. House Communications Subcommittee Chairman Greg Walden, W7EQI of Oregon, supports new FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler's move to study FCC reform proposals by Congress with a report due on his desk by year's end. But the subcommittee chairman still wants action on other bills that he's proposed that would implement some of these reforms. In a news release, Walden is quoted as saying that he welcomes Chairman Wheeler's openness in looking for ways to improve transparency and accountability for the American people and those that have business before the commission. Walden went on to say that in the meantime, we'll continue working on reaching bipartisan agreement on the FCC's Process Reform Act, and similarly hope that the Senate will soon take up the FCC Consolidated Reporting Act, which was unanimously approved by the House this summer. The Consolidated Reporting Act has supporters on both sides of the aisle. Though it does have some Democratic opponents, it's expected that it will most likely pass both the House and the Senate. As the name suggests, it would consolidate 8 FCC annual reports to Congress into a single biannual report. The Process Reform Act prospects are somewhat less bright, although it did pass out of the Energy and Commerce Committee on promises to work with Democrats on some of their issues. This measure would put shot clocks on FCC decisions that would limit the conditions the FCC could put on media mergers. This is the aspect the Democrats are not likely to support. The Senate Commerce Committee is looking into patent trolls. The issue is of interest to radio as several ownership grounds are fighting patent infringement allegations from Digimedia over digital music storage and playback technology. The Subcommittee on Consumer Protection, Product Safety, and Insurance held its hearing November the 7th to examine the impact of demand letters from so-called patent assertion entities on small businesses, consumers, and tech firms. The hearing will consider whether legislation is needed to provide increased protection for these individuals and groups. Government and other experts estimate that some patent trolls can send upward of thousands of demand letters to businesses with threats of litigation for alleged patent infringement and include a demand for payment. Now, many small businesses pay off, even if they haven't violated any patents, as doing so is usually less expensive than fighting it out in a court of law. Moody Broadcasting Station KMBI on 1330 kilohertz in Spokane, Washington, has been knocked off the air by copper thieves. The theft was noticed Sunday morning, November 3rd, when station employees found that one of their tower monitors was out and called police. Further investigation by an employee revealed numerous cables had been stripped from the tower. News reports quote the Spokane County Sheriff's Office as saying that it would cost the station thousands of dollars to repair and get it back on the air. KMBI has an FM operation on 107.9 that was not affected. The autumn 2013 edition of the 5 megahertz newsletter is now available for download at tinyurl.com/OUAALV6. In addition to the latest 5 megahertz news, there's also features on emergency communications, messaging with an international dimension, the current Radio Society of Great Britain 5 megahertz discussion, and much more. Also included is news of a television interview with IARU President Emeritus Larry Price, W4RA. In it, Price explains the workings of World Radio Communications Conferences and the International Telecommunications Union. Again, you can down this issue free of charge at tinyurl.com/OUAALV6. And lest we forget, this edition number 8 marks the second anniversary of the 5 megahertz newsletter, and we say congratulations. Radio Amateurs of Canada has congratulated the students, volunteers, and educator Robert Strimer, VE4SHS at Shaftesbury High School in Winnipeg, Manitoba. This for the recent and very successful launch of the Sharp 3.1 helium-filled balloon, reaching an impressive maximum altitude of 117,214 feet. Sharp 3.1 carried a payload consisting of 4 cameras, a number of electronic sensors, a Geiger counter, a 3-axis accelerometer magnetometer, and various other sensors. According to Radio Amateurs of Canada, now begins the task of analyzing all of the data that was collected during the flight. The British Broadcasting Corporation's online program, News Magazine, has a neat little story giving a very positive view of ham radio in the United Kingdom, titled The Very Particular World of Amateur Radio. The 3.5-minute video report talks about the recent growth in licensing in Great Britain. It also follows the operation of the Chorley and District Amateur Radio Society as it took part in the recent Castles and Stately Homes on the Air operating event from Astley Hall in the city of Lancashire. Both the video and the text story that accompanies it are on the web at tinyurl.com/BBC-news-ham-radio. The hit ABC situation comedy Last Man Standing can now say that it has 17 licensed radio amateurs as a part of its production crew. On Saturday, November 9th, the show added 8 new technician class operators and had its first general class upgrade. According to the show's producer, John Amadeo, NN6JA, that brings the show's total to 14 technicians, 1 general, and 2 extra class operators. Norm Goodkin, K6YXH, Naomi Goodkin, WB6OHW, and Rob Anton Tanachi, AA6RA, of the Greater Los Angeles Amateur Radio Group VEC, administered the exam session. NN6JA also notes that the Thanksgiving episode, which airs on Friday, November the 22nd, features Tim Allen as Mike Baxter, KA0XTT, once again on his amateur radio station as a part of the script's plotline. You'll also hear the voices of approximately 100 real hams that sent in audio clips for use in that very special holiday show. Last Man Standing airs on the ABC television network on Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific and 7 p.m. Central Time. Please consult local listings for the station broadcasting Last Man Standing in your geographic area. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. Look for a big signal returning to the international shortwave bands. This is one of the United States' major transmission facilities comes back to life. Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kimford, N8WB, has the details.
A Florida-based shortwave facility, formerly owned by Family Radio, will soon be back on the air. This following a sales agreement with another United States-based international broadcaster that will close its own smaller Florida shortwave transmission site. WYFR in Okeechobee, Florida, was founded by evangelist Harold Camping. He used to broadcast Christian programming to an international audience, but it turned off its transmitters last June. Now comes word that Family Stations Incorporated will sell WYFR to Radio Miami International, which currently operates station WRMI. Once the transaction is completed, Family Radio programming for the Caribbean and South America will return to shortwave via the Okeechobee site. Radio Miami's programming currently aired on WRMI will then switch over to Okeechobee facilities. In its announcement, WRMI stated that the station will also carry programs for other international broadcasters, including Pan American Broadcasting Radio Africa Network. As a result of this transaction, WRMI's 50-kilowatt transmission site in Miami will close, and its call letters will be moved to Okeechobee. The latter is claimed to be the largest shortwave station in the United States by number of transmitters and antennas, according to the WRMI announcement. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, N8WB in Wadsworth, Ohio.
The exact date for the switchover to the Okeechobee site has yet to be announced. Attempts to recover the 20-year-old AO-27 ham radio satellite are continuing, and now signals have been received on 436.795 megahertz. Reed Brister is W4UPD in Melbourne, Florida. He reports over the AMSAT bulletin board that he heard AO-27 a couple of times on November the 10th and 11th. W4UPD says that the telemetry he monitored was good and strong. For the latest information, please take your web browser to www.tinyurl.com/AO27-rescue-update. Students at the Tama Art University in Tokyo, Japan are planning to send a sculpture called RSAT 2 Dispatch, along with an amateur radio payload, into deep space. This to take place sometime in mid-2014. The sculpture, which is 50 by 50 by 45 centimeters, was created at the university using a 3D printer. The ham radio portion of the payload will consist of a CW beacon in the 435 megahertz band using an omnidirectional antenna. The sculpture and ham radio gear are planned to launch as a secondary payload along with the primary asteroid explorer, Hayabusa 2. Hayabusa 2 will be making a round trip to the C-type asteroid 1999 JU3, arriving in mid-2018. For hams here on Earth, this mission should provide the ultimate in DX reception challenge, especially when at its maximum distance of 2 million miles from the Earth. More about this interesting combined art and science exploration exercise is on the web now at tinyurl.com/artsat-dispatch. The European Space Agency's GOCE satellite has entered the Earth's atmosphere on Sunday evening, November the 10th, U.S. time, burning up in the process. Early estimates suggest that any surviving debris is likely to have fallen somewhere along its polar flight path through East Asia and the Western Pacific into Antarctica. The GOCE mission was operating in an extremely low orbit of about 140 miles above Mother Earth. This was amongst the lowest of any scientific satellite and required constant use of its novel electric ion engine to stay aloft. In mid-October, its fuel reserves were exhausted, so its descent into the atmosphere and burn-up was expected. Dubbed the Ferrari of space because of its streamlined looks, GOCE is the first ESA bird to make an uncontrolled re-entry in more than 2.5 decades. In its final days on orbit, several news outlets suggested the public track the demise of GOCE at the N2YO.com website. A new 60-meter beacon is on the air in South Africa thanks to the Kempton Park Amateur Radio Technical Society. The ZS6KTS propagation study device transmits on 5.250 megahertz at 5-minute intervals with PSK31 as the preferred mode. This is in support of 60-meter activity weekend. Should you hear the ZS6KTS beacon, please send a signal report to beacon at zs6kts.co.za. Your assistance in capturing 5 megahertz propagation data is much appreciated. On the air, keep an ear open for members of the Radio Society of Sri Lanka to be active through November the 30th using the special call sign 4SOCGM. This to commemorate the 23rd Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting to be held in the city of Colombo. Operations on the HF bands, and you can QSL via Bureau or direct to RSSL PO Box 907, Colombo, Sri Lanka. 3 amateur radio groups in Puerto Rico will be on the air with special event call signs to commemorate the 520th anniversary of the discovery of Puerto Rico made by Christopher Columbus on his second voyage on November the 19th, 1493. The organizations taking part are the Caribbean Amateur Radio Group as N4D through November the 19th, The Western Amateur Radio Group as W4D from November the 17th through the 21st, and the Boroquin Amateur Radio Club as K4D on November the 19th only. There will be a QSL card for individual contacts and a special certificate for those who contact all three stations. You can QSL as directed on the air. In DXUU5WW will be active stroke 3B8 from Mauritius Island between November the 17th and the 30th. Operation will be holiday style, using mostly CW on 80 through 10 meters, with the possibility of some 160-meter time as well. QSL via K2PF. K7YB will be active from Belize November the 20th through the 25th as V31YB. He'll be on operational style on 20, 40, 10, and 6 meters, using CW and single sideband, QSL direct via his home call sign. OH6RX at OH7WV will be operational as AHOK from Tinian Island in the Northern Mariana Islands for the CQ Worldwide DXCW contest November the 23rd and 24th as a multi-2 entry. Activity outside the contest will be on the HF bands and possibly 6 meters. You can QSL via OH6GDX. FG1JD will be operating stroke FS from St. Martin between November the 25th and the 30th. Activity will be on 40, 20, and 15 meters using CW sideband and some of the digital modes. QSL via his home call sign. Lastly, GODHZ will be in Tunis for a four-week stay, but he recently learned that the rules have been changed and activity during the week's no longer permitted. Therefore, he'll only be on the air weekend signing 3V8SS. Listen out for him on 80 through 10 meters with an emphasis on 30, 17, and 12 using CW and sideband, QSL direct via the Bureau, or electronically using EQSL. And finally this week, a follow-up to an earlier story regarding a ham radio floater balloon out of India. Here's Don Wilbanks, AE5DEW.
The payload of the Indian Amateur Radio APRS balloon launched on October 13th has been successfully retrieved. It was returned to Dhruva Space on November 3rd after it was found about 27 miles off the coast of Kangoli, Karnataka, on November 15th by sailors on a fishing boat. The balloon had been launched from the Indian Institute of Astrophysics in Bangalore and drifted into the Arabian Sea. Ham radio operators in India, the Middle East, and Africa were able to track the APRS signal, containing real-time location, altitude, and other operation conditions of the flight for over 370 miles.
I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
The return of the balloon payload was made possible thanks to the cooperation of hams that tracked its travel from launch to landing. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, Twit TV, and Australia's WIA News. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at our editor's desk, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2013. All rights are reserved.